Do you have questions about living with diabetes in South Africa? You're in very good company. Turns out we all do. Welcome to South Africans with Diabetes. I'm Bridget McNulty, and today we're going to be answering your questions to help you live a healthy, happy life with diabetes. This podcast is brought to you by Lilly. First, a disclaimer. I am not a medical expert. Please discuss any changes you want to make to your diabetes treatment with your doctor. The language of diabetes. I'm not going to lie, I have resisted doing this episode for some time, and I'll tell you why. I knew that once we had this conversation, we would need to make some pretty big changes. And I am lazy at heart, and I didn't want to have to make those changes, even though I knew they were the right thing to do. What am I talking about? I'm mainly talking about the word diabetic, to be honest. It's not cool. It should be person with diabetes or person living with diabetes. I know that. Only I don't mind being called a diabetic. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. I have it tattooed on my arm, type 1 diabetic on insulin. And we called our Facebook page Diabetic South Africans 10 years ago when we didn't know better. And we called this podcast Diabetic South Africans last year when we kind of did know better. And I'm very resistant to change, but no more. You know, when I realized it was so important to change the language we use, it was last year I was editing South Africa's first diabetes charter for the Diabetes Summit, and I replaced all the references to diabetic with person living with diabetes, and it is more of a mouthful, which I think is kind of the complaint from people, why add more words in when you don't have to, but it changes the flavor completely. And then we changed all the references to patients, to people with diabetes, and all of a sudden, it feels as if the blame shifts. It's kind of transformative that one word can make such a difference. So instead of pigeonholing diabetic patients for being non-compliant, we're talking about the lived experience of people with diabetes and the challenges we face every day. This stuff is so important. So we have renamed the podcast and Facebook page to South Africans with Diabetes, and we are going to learn more so that we can do better. Are you ready? I'll take that as a yes. I can think of no better person to open our eyes to why the language of diabetes matters than Renza Shibidia. She is the manager of type 1 diabetes and communities at Diabetes Australia and has taught me so much about diabetes and language in our various interactions online. Renza, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Bridget, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
So I hope you're ready. I have some questions. South Africa is pretty much at step one in the diabetes and language journey. And don't even get me started on the diabetes and imagery journey. We have so much to learn. Like, literally, there is nothing you could say that we already know. So let's dive in. Why does the language of diabetes matter?
Oh, look, it's not just language, it's communication. So it does include images, as you said. It includes tone. It includes, of course, it does include the words, but it really is about the meaning and the attitudes that language, imparts when we use certain words. So I was really interested to hear your introduction there, because one of the things that I'm going to say that's probably going to come as a bit of a surprise maybe is that the word, so you there were three words that you said there that I think are really important. So you spoke about diabetics and not using that term anymore, and patients and using people instead, and non-compliant, and you just don't use that. Of all of those words, the one that I think let's just put it to bed now and deal with it, and then we'll talk about others, is diabetic versus person with diabetes.
That is like the hot ticket one.
You know what? It's the one that annoys me most, because it's the one that we get so bogged down in and then we forget about the rest of it and why the rest is so important. So as a person with diabetes, you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself.
Let's say that again, because that's the bit that people get so uptight about that.
I know. So as a person with diabetes, call yourself whatever you want. I wrote a blog post called Call Me Blossom because I just got so sick of people saying, but I want to be called this. I'm like, call yourself that. No one has said that a person with diabetes needs to use a certain word or certain language. It's not about us. We can use whatever language we want. So let's park that one and just say, you want it, literally, you want to tattoo it to your body? go and tattoo it to your body. Whichever one works for you, that's fine.
Want to have to tattoo three extra words, right? Because if I said type one person living with diabetes, that person living with diabetes, that's three extra words. It's very painful.
I know, and there's only so much skin real estate, especially when you've got devices to then also consider. So the diabetic versus person with diabetes thing, we have now spoken about it and we're not going to talk about it again now while we're talking about language. Yes. But there are other words and there are reasons why we need to really consider the way that we use language and that we communicate. So a lot of people think it is just about political correctness. And it's like, you know, it's really woke. You need to use person-centered language and blah, 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 and that's why. And my attitude to that is don't use language that's going to offend people. I mean, that's not just diabetes. That's anywhere. Don't use words that are going to upset people, and that's kind of important. But it's about so much more than just that, okay? And so I think that it's once we start to talk about the trickle-down effect and why language is important and it's not just about words that people start to sit up and go, oh, yeah, okay, I kind of get it. So I think that we can all agree that diabetes has a bit of an image problem. People love to make jokes about diabetes and blame people with diabetes and look at this beautiful cake. It's diabetes on a plate. Ha, hilarious. Okay. Never heard that one before. Part of the reason that we need to really work to change the way that people are thinking is so that we stop that, that we do something about this image problem and people understand that diabetes is really complex and it's really serious and living with diabetes is hard work and quite frankly, I would like a medal. And I think that that's part of the reason why I'm so passionate about language is because I want people to respect and understand just how tough living with diabetes is about. But that image problem has gone on to mean that we have fewer research dollars coming our way. So if you actually look at research dollars for diabetes as compared with other health conditions, we get less. If you were to ask a person walking down the street what they think is the most serious health condition and you list a few, diabetes will be down the list.
So in South Africa, diabetes is the number one killer of women. A non-lethal condition that is manageable is the number one killer of women. No research goes towards it. HIV gets all the attention. And it's so interesting you talk about the image problem. That is probably what's the root cause of it, is that no one thinks diabetes is serious. Everyone That's thinks right. you give it to yourself. And so there's this attitude of like, wow, I mean, if it's the top killer of women, it's because the women are not exercising and eating the wrong kind of food. But it's this urgent, serious problem that no one is paying any attention to. So that's all over the world. It's not just in South Africa.
No, it's everywhere. And you know what? When you're talking about the fact that it's the number one killer of women, there's also health systems that are really not all that well set up for women in a lot of...
Second in men. So I always say that next. I'm like, number one in women, but if you don't care about number that, let's talk about the men. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And that's a really important point, is that, you know, it is serious. Clearly it's serious. But can I just say, you know, you mentioned HIV there. And a massive shout out to the HIV community, because this is something, talk about a well-organized and, you know, and it's not that everybody agrees. It's just that they've done a really, really good job of communicating and really undoing a lot of those misconceptions about HIV that was seen to be true and gospel and we all had to believe it sort of 25 years ago. Yeah. Massive, massive kudos to the people who were doing that.
And they were almost belligerent about it too, which I appreciate. Yes. They were just like, no, we're not going to put up with this. Like HIV stigma, it's not a thing. So yeah, I agree. We need to get a little more of that energy. What fascinates me so much is that when I was looking through the diabetes and language stuff Diabetes Australia's done, I always think it's just the media we have to be worried about. So when I was thinking diabetes and language, we're going to have a campaign later in the year. We're going to approach the media. But then I started reading more and I was like, oh no, like healthcare is a huge problem and government is a huge problem. So, so of the three, are they all kind of media, healthcare, government? Are those the big three? And are they all equally a problem or how do you see them?
I think they, and add community, like the general community into there as well. But they're getting messaging from the media, I guess. So that's, so I think that they are all important for different reasons. But I think that that's one of the things actually that I really like about that language position statement that we relaunched last year was that there were examples for each different audience and researchers as well, and saying, you know, this is probably what you use because it's what you've always used, but look, using exactly the same number of words, so it's not necessarily going to be a lot more words and space on a page or time in a consultation. You can still get the message across. In fact, you can get it across far more effectively and far more factually and far more engagingly, in a far more engaging way. And that's something that I think people suddenly go, oh, okay, so it's actually not going to be much more work, because that's, no one wants to do the work. I get that. We're also busy. We don't want to add extra things. So when we start to point out how actually it's just a change in mindset, and it will take time, that's okay. And if you feel like you're too afraid to do it because you're going to make a mistake, it doesn't matter. Just keep going and keep pushing through. And
I love that attitude too. Because I don't think that gets said a lot in, like, you mentioned woke earlier, and I think sometimes when there's like a new movement that comes in and it's just like, this is unacceptable, you have to stop using this language, it feels very black and white. Like, if you make a mistake, there will be repercussions. Mm. And I think it's so important to say, this is a journey we're all on. We're figuring out what is most helpful and what reduces stigma the most, because that's at the root cause of it, right? Like, all of this language stuff is so that people with diabetes can be seen as humans first rather than walking illnesses.
That's exactly right. A walking health condition that they brought on themselves. Yes, exactly right. We want to change that. And that is what the whole thing is about. It's really not about, monitoring the words and wrapping people over the knuckles, but it is highlighting why it matters and how things can change. So you're right, in that healthcare setting, it's critically important, because we've all heard stories, or we've experienced those stories ourselves, where we've walked out of a clinic appointment feeling worse coming out than we felt going in. We felt that we haven't been listened to. We felt that we've been blamed if something's going wrong. We feel like it's our fault. And nobody should feel like that. We're going into a healthcare appointment because we want to improve our health or maintain a healthy lifestyle or whatever it is. And so to have a feeling when you leave of, bursting into tears and not wanting to go back. And that's the story that I keep hearing from people, is I just felt so horribly judged and stigmatized that I really didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back, and I haven't been back. I didn't go back for years. So
linked, that so much of the language seems so linked to burnout and trying to prevent burnout too, which I think is so important. Like, that's the whole idea, right, is that we're not past failing diabetes, we're all just living with it. I want to read, you mentioned the position statement, and I think it's so beautiful, I just want to read a little bit of it.
Sure.
So Diabetes Australia created this position statement. This was a refresh of one from a decade ago, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we launched the first one in September 2011, and then we relaunched it in about September last year.
And it's specifically about language and diabetes. And here's the description. I think it's so powerful. Our language matters. The words we choose and the way we use them influence, persuade, and affect how people view the world. Words do more than reflect reality. They create reality. Words are powerful. They can create a culture in which people feel valued, understood, and supported, or one in which people feel misunderstood, undermined, stigmatized, and excluded. Words can express conscious or unconscious bias. People with diabetes, their families, and people at risk of diabetes need and deserve communications that are clear and accurate, respectful and inclusive, and free from judgment and bias. I mean, can we get a round of applause? I love this. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
So how is it received? Did you have to fight the media and the healthcare and government to make the necessary changes, or were they quite open to it?
Oh, at first it was a bit of an uphill battle, because what was happening is that we absolutely would be sitting there. And I think when we rolled it out, there were quite a number of presentations that we did for healthcare professionals, because we felt that that was a really good and important place to start. Mm-hmm. And there was some pushback and there was some reluctance to accept what was being said. But by and large, it was just people not realizing, I think, how impactful language could be. So one of the things that was really important that went alongside the development of the position paper was some research to back it up. So the beauty around that was that, you know, Diabetes Australia may have launched this position paper 10 years ago or 10 and a half years ago now, but we didn't invent that this was an issue. This had been something that people with diabetes have been talking about for years. Mm. But it was so easy to be dismissed if it was just people with diabetes just seen as saying, well, this is my experience or I've heard this, because it was all seen as very anecdotal and, you know, well, what's the evidence? And, you know, sadly, I actually think that should be enough evidence if enough people are saying it, but it simply wasn't. But suddenly then to have some research that had been conducted by the Australian Centre for Behavioural Research in Diabetes, and Diabetes Australia had actually commissioned this for the position statement, the way that I explained it was that I would get up and wave my hands around and talk about why it was important, and then James Spate, who is the director for the Centre for Behavioural Research in Diabetes, would get up and say, and here's the evidence to support what she's saying. And suddenly it became really hard to ignore. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I've learnt over time that, and I've spoken about this heaps recently, because I think the best way to explain why that's important is when you're trying to tell a story and convince people and bring them along, you've got to win their hearts and you've got to win their minds. So I was all about the heart, and Jane would step up and she'd be there with the mind. I'm like, okay, well, this is a far more rounded picture now so that you can understand why it's affecting an individual. But here is some research to show how much it impacts the community and also what you can do to address it. So having solutions, I think, was also really important. But it was a significant sample of people with diabetes globally who were invited to participate in an online survey, and there were thousands of people with diabetes who were involved. It wasn't, you know, four people that were my mates that I handpicked because I knew what they were going to say. it was, you know, people globally. And, you know, the thing that came from that, though, was that then we had to also accept that some of the things that we'd been saying, which very much was around, you know, that diabetic person with diabetes thing. I think when we looked at it, the breakdown was about 50-50 in terms of people who prefer to be called diabetic as compared with person with diabetes. So we felt that it was really important then to highlight that and say, you need to listen to what people are saying. You need to go back to them. It's not a blanket, don't use this word instead when we're speaking to health professionals or the media. What we would say, though, and let's just for a minute talk about that issue again, just for a second, is that whilst people will say, I don't mind being called a diabetic, there are a lot of people who say, I really do mind that. Whereas no one seems to really mind being called a person with diabetes.
Exactly.
So that's what we're saying. So that's what we would say to health professionals or to health centres or to the media. Yeah. If you say this, 50% of the people might get their back up if you say diabetic, but if you say the other one, no one will notice.
No one cares.
Will have an eyelid and no one will care. So do the stuff that's not going to offend. Like that's the easy bit here. Do the stuff that's not going to offend. So yeah, that's where we're at.
So what I loved is that there's a whole section in this position statement, which I'll share with our listeners, about choosing how we communicate about people, which is just what you're saying now. And I loved it so much because a lot of it was just very obvious. Like one of the lines was, instead of diabetic, try person. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's so intense because no one is even thinking about this. The fact that you had to write that is so intense. And then things like, instead of testing glucose, try checking. I loved, instead of unmotivated, try has other priorities right now. That's just, I feel a wash of relief going over me when I read that. And it seems like a lot of the language can help, like we said earlier, with specifically preventing burnout, because it lifts the blame and the shame from the person with diabetes and kind of casts it in a broader light. Was burnout a big focus of this?
Yeah, always. You know, we're always wanting to minimize the fact that people with diabetes have so much on their plate already, and that can lead to burnout and to diabetes distress. So, yes, of course, absolutely. But I think that the thing in there as well that's, you know, really interesting is, you know, how you can't blame someone for getting burnt out if they're constantly thinking, testing glucose levels, testing, testing.
Am I in
control? Just imagine. Yeah, my kid is doing her final year at school at the moment, and, you know, everything's about leading up to exams and all of this stuff. And it's like, it's this constant pressure cooker. So if you're living with diabetes for 5, 10, 15, 50, you know, 80 years, whatever, and you're constantly hearing, you know, I'm being tested, I'm testing my blood sugar, and it's just a really small change that people have said that makes a really big difference. And, you know, where I first learnt this actually was before we'd even launched the position statement. When I was working for a different diabetes organization, and we used to run camps for kids. And I remember going and sitting there one day, and it was just before a meal, and these are all young kids, and they all were checking their glucose levels, and it was really interesting the way the glucose levels were spoken about. So glucose levels were high or low. That was it. And you could see the way that clearly the health professionals had been worded up on this, and that was the language of the camp. And and I remember seeing this kid say, getting their glucose level, and it was high, and they went, "Oh, that's really bad." And the diabetes educator went, "Well, it's high. It's higher than, you know, we'd like it to be, but we can do something about that. That's what's really great about getting numbers. We look at it, we know what we need to do, and then we can do it. That's all it is. It's just a bit high." And it just, like, this kid, the look of relief over this kid's face, and I just thought, wow, if this kid every time they're looking at a glucometer or looking at your CGM or whatever, you're thinking good, bad, moral compass right there, that reflects the sort of the person that I am as well. That is a lot of pressure to be putting on you every minute of every day, instead of just looking at a number and going, "Oh, it's a bit high, I should probably have a bit more insulin," or "It's a bit high, but, you know, I've got insulin on board, it's going to come down." Yeah. Okay, move on.
I had this revelation last year because we did a whole thing on diabetes and depression, and we've done other work on behavior change, but specifically on kind of unplugging the "it's possible to be a perfect diabetic" myth. So many of us attach blame to highs, but not really to lows. And so then I started looking at it very closely. And I was making rice in the microwave one day, and it overboiled, as microwave rice inevitably does when I do it, because I don't know how to do the water to rice ratio. And there was no part of me that was like, "Oh, come on, you miscalculated. Do better. Why are you failing?" Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, wait," but that was just a calculation. I looked at the rice and the water, I made a calculation, and I made the wrong calculation, and then I cleaned up the mess. Why don't I have that same attitude when I make a miscalculation with my insulin dosage? And so that helped me to switch things. And it's like taken the sting out of the reaction. But I find it so strange that so many of us have those reactions to numbers. And I think it's because of the way we were indoctrinated when we were first diagnosed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, it doesn't help when there are color-coded charts where you've got red is this. Or you know, I mean, my – gosh, I remember – and I was angry about this – when I saw at a pediatric hospital an HbA1c chart that was graded A+, A, B. Like, who is grading HbA1cs? I was so angry. It was one of those moments where I was so furious that I bashed out this very long Twitter thread. It was probably about 17 or 20 tweets or something. So bang, 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 and hit tweet, and off they all went. And then I read it back after, and I'm like, this is one of those moments where you probably should have walked away and come back. But then I wrote about it afterwards for Diabetogenic, and I thought, no, you know what? That fury is the fury of people the people with diabetes who have walked in and been told that they are an F because of what their HbA1c is.
And the parents who are freaking out already because they don't know what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And they're being told they're failing at their child's health. Yes. It's even worse.
Even worse. Yeah. I mean, it's just – so, you know, that's the sort of – we're trying to just – reduce that constant judgment and that burden that becomes so heavy. It really becomes heavy.
And relentless, hey?
Oh, yeah.
So now the big question, where do we start? You've already done international research, so can we just use that as our science backup?
Yeah. Well, this is a good thing you're not starting at square one because so much has happened before. So, you know, and this is the thing that I think, even though it sort of seems like Diabetes Australia started at zero, we weren't. We were starting already because we were, you know, learning from people with diabetes who'd been talking about this for so long. So there's so much stuff out there that you don't need to go and do the research. You don't need to go and do the research yourself. You don't even need to write your own position statement, because you can rejig one that's already there, and you can rewrite it if you want, and just put your own logo on it and credit Diabetes Australia or one of the other ones. There are now position statements from all, and guidance statements and whatever else they're calling them, from all over the world. Amazing. Find your favorite one, send a message to the authors and say, can I use it? And then start to have the conversation. So this is a really good start. This is absolutely a good start. But I think the biggest thing is you need to build allies, and that is really important, because one of the reasons that this has been so hugely, I guess, successful, but it's also become a bit of a juggernaut, is because we've been able to collect people along the way who have gone, oh, yeah, this is a really big issue. So, you know, in the US, there were these great diabetes educators. They went, yeah, we need to do something. So they got that going there. And then in the UK, there was a group of really vocal advocates, and then there was a health professional who also, you know, really drove it from that policy perspective, and so suddenly there's that group as well. So when you've got that momentum of people actually saying, yep, we're coming on board this. But the beautiful thing is that there's so much already there, so you're not a lone voice. And when someone says to you, this is a load of rubbish, you can go, really? Because here's 10 years of history that would suggest otherwise. And you've got something to point to that can show that.
And I think if anyone actually reads it, they won't say this is a load of rubbish. I think it's easy to dismiss if you haven't read anything. If you've read like a one-liner, then you could be like, oh, come on, this is so unnecessary. But as soon as you read even a paragraph, you're like, oh, no, wait, this is actually very necessary. I just want to briefly touch on imagery, because, I mean, if we're not doing well with language, whew, we are doing badly with imagery. I was at the pharmacy the other day, and there was a wall of information leaflets for various conditions with a picture on each. And the one for diabetes was a plate of sugary sour worms, like spaghetti, being forked up with a fork. So we generally will have a pile of sugar, actually like a pile of sugar on a plate accompanying anything in the media, or a burger and chips, or some kind of fast food, or someone at an unhealthy weight, often with their head chopped off. Those are like the options that they're all using. So imagery, did you just include that? Or
You're also forgetting the person from behind. So how dehumanizing is this? We don't get to see faces. You know, you're right. It's someone hoeing into a burger, and you can see the burger and maybe their mouth, but you can't see them. So isn't that a great way to dehumanize people? You know, and you know what? Hey, when there are no faces and no humans and people behind it, it's a lot easier to point your finger and poke fun at people.
Totally.
So, that's exactly right. The imagery is appalling. It is absolutely appalling. And it's also incorrect. It doesn't tell the story. So sugar doesn't cause diabetes. So why are you putting a plate of sour worms with a fork in it? Like, what's that got to do with it? And eating a hamburger is not going to give you diabetes. And, you know, so all of these things are really, really incorrect. And also it's incredibly stigmatizing, because what you're saying is, well, that overweight person who is eating a hamburger, they deserve to be sick, because clearly they don't care about themselves. Yeah. They're slothful, and they're, you know, it's all about gluttony. It's just constantly feeding into this stigmatizing attitude about what diabetes is and who people with diabetes are. So I think that it is really important that we talk images just as much as we talk words.
Yeah. And especially in South Africa, actually, because I don't know what the situation is in Australia, but we're such a multiracial country that image choice is very loaded. So like, everyone will try and go for this like happy caramel color in between that won't really offend anyone and doesn't really represent anyone, but they're too scared to do that for diabetes, because it would be pointing a finger. And so I think that's why they're going for like silhouettes or food, or you're right, like the back of someone and you can't really see what color they are. Oh my goodness, this stuff makes me so cross. Okay, we got some work to do.
But you know what? It's also the images that we use around complications, because that's the thing that I remember from my diagnosis. I was diagnosed 24 years ago, and I remember the day I was diagnosed showing these pictures. So I was showing what an eye with retinopathy looked like, just the eye with retinopathy. And I'm like,
gosh,
I don't know what diabetes is. So why are you showing me, it looks like an eye with a bit of red star. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And somebody on dialysis. And again, I'm like, well, what's going on with that kidney? I've got no idea. And an amputated limb, not attached to a person, just an amputated, you know, just showing from like a knee. And that was like, and I just remember thinking at the time, well, it doesn't make sense, but God, I'm really scared now all of a sudden. And I was terrified. And so, you know, thinking about the images that we're using when we're, you know, just having a body part, again, is dehumanizing. Because you know what?
Yeah.
Yes, people with diabetes experience higher rates of amputations. But, hey, the rest of the person is at play here too. So show all of them and think about how their mind is feeling and how emotionally they're feeling and everything else. So, yeah, I think that it's a really important conversation to have as well, is about the images and how diabetes is represented pictorially as well as using words.
Mm. Fascinating. I got one last question. Which we always ask. What makes your life sweet?
Oh, well, two things. One, I'm a baker in my spare time. So literally whatever it is that I've just pulled out of the oven makes me very happy. And
amazing.
The neighbors love that too. But of course, mostly it is my beautiful family. So my absolutely divine husband, who is a musician, and we've been together for, well, actually I was diagnosed 6 months before we got married, and we still got married. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
And we have a 17-year-old daughter who is amazing. The light and joy of our life. And we have a menagerie of a couple of dogs and a cat as well. The cat totally rules all of us, and she's only a kitten, so she's just learning to do that. But it's certainly, you know, an incredible family and beautiful friends and that support network that I have around me all the time.
Oh, Renzo, thank you so much for sharing your experience and all your wisdom. I can't tell you what a relief it is to know that there's a path already laid out when it comes to diabetes and language, and we can just start building the South African version. I love it.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you have a whole community around the world who will be very, very happy to help out.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. That is such a relief. I want to invite all our listeners to share your thoughts on diabetes and language. I'm so curious. I feel like we're going to have a bunch of converts now, because we've actually explained that it's not just about individual words. So please share your thoughts and your experiences on Facebook, South Africans with Diabetes, on Instagram, sweetlife.org.za, or head to our website, sweetlife.org.za, for more diabetes information and advice. Thank you so much for joining us, Renzo, and for taking the time from the other side of the world. It is so appreciated.
I just have had so much fun chatting with you, and I can't wait to see what happens with the Language Matters Movement South Africa. How exciting.
I want to thank you for taking the time to listen today and invite you to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. It's such a pleasure to be able to spend this time with you, and I really appreciate it. I'm sure your diabetes management appreciates it too. Big thanks to Lilly for sponsoring this season of South Africans with Diabetes. Lilly is the leading provider of insulin in South Africa, supporting people with diabetes through high-quality, affordable products. Lilly unites caring with discovery to create medicines that make life better for people around the world. This podcast comes to you from Sweet Life Diabetes Community. We are South Africa's largest online diabetes community, a space to connect with other people living with diabetes, share tips, and offer advice. Our website, sweetlife.org.za, has all the diabetes info you need, all in one place. We're like the diabetes Wikipedia of South Africa. We offer expert advice that's easy to understand and written just for you. Whether you're looking for the latest news and updates on diabetes in South Africa, tips to manage your condition better, meal plans and diabetes-friendly recipes, exercise suggestions, or how to lose weight, we have an expert answer for you. We also have free ebooks to download, a diabetes cookbook, diabetes guidebook, and a healthy food guide. Most importantly, we have a community of people with diabetes who understand what it's like to live with the condition every day. We're all in this together.